This is Non-Human Biologics, the creepy but necessary podcast where Chris and I cover every single episode of the TV show X-Files. And this week, we are starting season two. And right off the bat, I just want to thank our good friend, our old friend, Jake Lionheart, for the incredible, what I'm calling the fast car remix of Time After, File After File. Chris, I don't even know, I sent you that link months ago now. I don't even know if you've ever got around to listening to this.
I don't remember if I did or
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I don't think that you did. I think you happened to be busy. So you need to listen to that. I'll send them to you again tonight. But yeah, thank you, Jake Lionheart, for the new remix. If you're missing the old song, you can go to SoundCloud and search Monster of the Week Podcast and find it there, or you can go to YouTube and watch the whole video that I edited for it. Also, YouTube Monster of the Week Podcast. Chris, it's been a while, my friend.
Yeah, I don't know how much you're going to learn from this, but let me tell you what happened on last season of the X-Files, or mostly just the previous episode. Last time on the X-Files, Mulder and Scully navigated a web of conspiracies and deceptions in their quest to reveal the truth about extraterrestrial life and government secrets. But it all came to a head when Scully, on the orders of Deep Throat, retrieved a tiny baby alien body in a mason jar in an attempt to secure Mulder's freedom. As an aside, I don't quite remember why Mulder was kidnapped or who kidnapped him, but I know that they tossed him out of the back of a van. Though Mulder was saved, Deep Throat was killed, and now it seems that the X-Files program itself is doomed.
It's true. This week, we are talking about X-Files Season 2, Episode 1, Little Green Men, which is written by Glenn Morgan and James Wong, directed by David Nutter. With the X-Files closed, Mulder is contacted by a political ally and sent on a dangerous mission to a radio telescope in Arecibo, Puerto Rico. It's nice to be back. I guess we should apologize. We didn't release an episode for 2 weeks. Can hear why in the outtakes, but we had I went out of the country, and then when I got back, there was a Louisiana. Apparently, God hates Louisiana right now because he just keeps sending bad storms.
He's been saying this.
It's not been good down here. I was without power for like a day and a half, which was super not fun. So we've been a little behind on recording. We're going to try to catch up for you though, so we can have a little bit more of a good schedule. But it's nice to be back.
It's good to be back,
and it always feels good. The season premiere always feels a little bit more important than the subsequent episodes, and I feel like this one follows in that path. Like I feel like with our characters disparate from one another, since we don't have we don't have Bobby's house anymore.
We don't have the X-Files basement. Jillian is super pregnant, so she's always just filmed from the shoulders up for this season.
And apparently that was a really horrible experience for her, by the way.
That sucks. They were not very nice to her, apparently. She had to like break the news to everybody like somebody died.
It's just ridiculous. Yeah, it's just very crazy. The show itself is really, really excellent. This episode is really, really excellent. I love the fact that we get this kind of character work for Mulder.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. We get a bunch of spycraft, which I'm always into.
Great spycraft. I love this concept of the little green men throughout it. Like Mulder questioning himself throughout it. Like, have I just literally imagined all this? Has everything that Scully and everybody else said about me, is it suddenly true that I've been looking for things that aren't really there? And that self-doubt is such a key part of this single episode arc, because by the end he's back.
And he's 100% back, like almost maybe worse than he was before, like more dedicated than he was before.
He might be too locked in, but hey, listen, you're either locked in or you're locked out, you know what I mean?
So let's start the episode. We get a picture of space, and we have Mulder narrating about the Voyager program, describing the messages that they carried when we sent them out to space. We get a montage of math symbols and music, and him saying, like, I think like the overall theme here is we wanted to listen. Like,
I loved it. Yeah, we wanted to believe. We wanted to we wanted to call out. And then he says we wanted to listen. And then he comes back to, I wanted to believe, but my tools have been taken away.
They closed our eyes.
We talk about this quest to send out, you know, humanity into the stars and to communicate. And then for some reason along the way, that was cut off. That program was cut off. So now the only reception coming through, as he's saying all of this, and we're seeing the universe, and it gets closer and closer and closer. And then eventually we get a shot of what we'll later learn is like this radio tower in Puerto Rico. And there's a message has been received.
We should take some time to, just because it's relatively recent news, and where else are we going to talk about the Voyager program? Did you see that NASA like basically like resurrected this thing?
What?
Yeah, dude. It is insane. Like, I am never not impressed with the ingenuity of NASA engineers, because they basically sent like tiny packets of information across millions of miles to this machine to basically turn it back on and to get it working again.
Shit.
It is absolutely insane that they were able to do it. Go look it up. You can just go like search Voyager 1 and then on NASA or whatever and pop up the full story. But like, yeah, it's super, super cool.
I love space stuff, dude.
I love space
stuff.
I
know we need to like fix Earth and whatever, but like space stuff is always so fun.
I love space stuff when it's NASA. I love like, we've talked about this before. I don't
when
like
Trump's making Space Army or Elon Musk is doing literally anything. I don't care about that. But when 100%. We're just exploring the outer limits of, you know, it's less about exploring space and in some ways more about exploring the human spirit.
Of course,
you know?
Of course. Yeah. That's which also is why you like Final Fantasy VIII. I think
right.
are two
they
of the similar themes.
They even go to space there.
Of course they do. I didn't even know that, but of course they do. Like I just automatically knew that was true. We also have some attention paid to this observatory that got shut down in Puerto Rico. It's going to be important. And we see, we go from like, I think this is very funny. We go from like actual footage, because you can tell because it's kind of like low def even for the time. Like actual like NASA footage of the antennas and everything, to very obviously like a stage control room.
Right.
And we go inside and like it starts waking up, right? Tape recorder starts spinning and start playing what sounds like music and the speech that we put on the Voyager. We get a printout, like all kinds of stuff happens. And then we go to Mulder. I think we get our, oh, by the way, Chris, yeah. We forgot something. We missed something in the finale episode. I'm glad that, so we had a running joke for a while of you forgetting that they put, you know, we want to believe, or the truth is out there. Excuse me. The truth is out there at the end of the credit scene. The finale, it's not there.
Oh.
And we missed it. And people.
Damn.
And our listeners were mad at us about it. So I just wanted
I'm
to take
so
the time.
I'm sorry, everybody.
Yeah, and I forgot to look for it this time, too. So I don't even know.
I started
there.
Doubting myself. I feel like I've really had a Mulder moment with that, where I, you know, jumped the gun on it one time and just really, I really lost it. I couldn't focus anymore.
So we start with Mulder. He's listening to a wiretap. This is obviously his new gig after the X-Files. He's listening to two presumed criminals talk about strippers, which is a little weird.
Obviously, I don't really know what the running joke is here. But.
Yeah, it's like one dude explaining strip clubs to another guy.
He's like, you're kidding. Get a load of that. Wait. No.
Yeah. He's talking about like how much
and
money he put on the thing. And like at the end of the episode, the guy's like, so what's the difference between a lap dance and a private dance? Like, he's just like, not, it's just hilarious. Like, I'm explaining someone is explaining what a strip club is to a grown man. Like, I just can't imagine it.
Yeah.
Man, dudes who are into strip clubs are so weird.
Awfully strange. I'm sorry. That's awfully strange. I don't like it.
I think I've told you before about the guy. He's a, I guess like a dude that I run into at trade shows that I have to do for my job. And one of the first times I met him, he was like, you want to go get some lunch? And I was like, sure, dude, let's go grab some lunch. Where do you want to go? Oh man, I know this place over in such and such. The girls are so hot, man. And I'm like, what? Where? Uh-huh. Like, is it a Hooters? Like, what are you talking? He's like, no, dude. I'm like, no, man, it's way better. They get so fucking naked. Da, 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 da. I'm like, we're going to lunch there? Nah, bro. Nah, yeah. I'm not. It is 11 a.m. in the morning. I'm not going to a strip club in Louisiana. It's just not going to happen. yeah, it's just so fucking weird, strip club culture. Anyway, we switch over to Scully, who is teaching, I guess, young students how to do autopsies. And she has this like moment of reflection where she talks about how the body, the man that's on the table that she's about to cut into, how fascinating it is that all of his hopes and dreams and his entire imagination is all contained within a small amount of tissue that's in his head. And she kind of trails off, and her students look at her, and so one of the students asks her, "Are you okay? You sound a little spooky." And she she pops up and spooky in just an incredible way. It's so good.
Yeah, and I don't know if what this like this question that Scully has, which is a good question. I appreciate that she's kind of having this pondering moment. But I don't know what it ties into with the rest of this episode.
Yeah, I think both of them are kind of going through their own.
Well, you know what? And you know what it is? It's because we have all these experiences. Just Mulder has all these experiences. He knows what he knows, but he has no way to prove it. And I think that so this abstract idea of like it's all this knowledge, all this evidence is contained within this brain tissue. You know, he has it in his memory, but there's just nothing concrete for them to hold on to. And now that this man on the table is dead, all of those experiences that he has, that's gone now.
And I also think that, like, they're with the absence of the X-Files, they're going through their own little existential crisis, right? Like, kind of questioning where do they fit into the world? And so when she sees this man dead on the table and she considers, like, the because I think there's a vastness in every one of us. Like, we all have our own internal, like, chasms of personality, I guess. Mm-hmm. And her kind of questioning where she fits and seeing this man on the table and thinking like all of the stuff that I've been thinking about, like my entire life and hopes and dreams, I can just see this man's version of that in a tiny piece of tissue. And it's a very humbling thing, I'm sure. And then also like you said, like he's kind of going through this whole process. We go from this to her casually passing Mulder in the hall and like saying hello, and he just breezes straight past her.
I was so mad for a second.
And then he goes to his desk, and there's a picture frame that's turned down. And as he picks it up, we see that it's Samantha, his sister that got abducted, mm-hmm. That disappeared. We should say we don't know if she got abducted. And then later they meet in the parking lot of the Watergate Hotel. And we learn that the picture frame being put down was a signal for them to meet. Mm. So they've spent the last little while like thinking that they're still being followed after the death of Deep Throat, thinking that they're still being watched and followed, and that they could have enemies in the government.
Which I think is a pretty safe thing for them to assume. And yeah, here we learn that Mulder wasn't just being a dick to her. He was like they believe it's too dangerous for them to talk. But Scully's like, dude, I've taken every precaution. I've done all these steps. I'm just meeting with you because I want to make sure that you're all right. Like when you walked by me in the hallway, and it wasn't even just him being rude or him not wanting to talk to her. From her perspective, he was 1,000 miles away. Like his he's just off drifting somewhere. And it's really, I think it's this boring work that they've given him has just sort of started to drain the life out of him. He's doing like random like cyber surveillance shit. Like his pursuit of the truth has died.
And Scully asked him, like, you know, when you told me, she says, like, you told me that you were going to keep pursuing this, like, are you, but I don't see that. And he talks about a telescope in San Diego, and how the idea for this telescope was given to the architect by an elf when he was playing pool. And he says, you know, and Scully, like crazy, like, are you saying that you're, you know, you've been seeing elves? Like this is like all of these ideas are given to you by elves. He's like, no, I've just been chasing little green men since I was a child. And, you know, he says he doesn't have any evidence. Like there's nothing for him to hold on to. And he needs that. He needs to have something, some hard evidence. And he even says, like, I learned that from you. Like I have to have something to hold on to. And this is when we learn that he has been doubting his entire existence. Like he doesn't even hear when she says, you know, well, you can hold on to what happened to your sister, which is a weird thing to say. And I know it's just going into like building into the meta plot. Like we keep having to bring sister stuff up, but it's just a weird thing to say to a friend. Like, oh yeah, well, you know, that time your sister got abducted in front of you, like that was that you could hold on to that. And he even says
he's having a crisis of faith.
Absolutely. Yeah. And he even doesn't even know if that happened. And you can see that he's just, as you mentioned, the life has been drained from him. He's aimless at this point. He's not shaving correctly. He's got a little 5 o'clock shadow happening, which is hot. And eventually
he's a little disheveled, but he's still, you know, ruggedly handsome.
Eventually, Scully They break apart, and Scully says, the next time we meet, we're going to meet out in the open. Like, she thinks that it's all of the, like, spy stuff is done. With, like, that nobody's watched them or anything. And we, since we're at the Watergate Hotel, they do a very clever transition, or maybe an obvious on-the-nose transition, where we go back to 1973, and on the TV, they're talking about, like, the deep throat Watergate situation that happened in the real world, which I kind of like. I think that's neat.
I like that too. And I love that this kid looks so much like a young David Duchovny here, at least in certain lights he does. For a second, I was like, is this his son? He doesn't have a son. What is going on here?
I will say these two kids, there's child actors, and then there's like children who are around that they just like
kids.
Round
like,
up.
That kid looked like David Duchovny. He's so like, well, just whatever. He'll just get him. He was just walking down the street and they grabbed him.
These kids are awful. They're both of them are just really, really bad. But this is young Fox and Samantha. They are playing games while their parents are out of town. They begin to argue over what they're going to watch on television, and that's when the lights go out, and lights outside begin to flash, and shit gets weird. So we're actually seeing this for the first time, obviously, in the show. But we see Mulder's sister be like levitated up and out the window as he like struggles to find a gun. He looks through the door and he sees a little green man. Like, he sees the classic alien silhouetted against this like bright, bright light. He watches as his sister goes out through the window, and all of a sudden he's jerked awake and we're back into the modern world. Like, he's having nightmares about this.
And as he kind of gets up from this nightmare, which again, is this confirmation that his memories are real if he's still dreaming about it? Or is this more fabrication because it's a dream? It's not reality. But as he wakes from this, he looks out the window, and then suddenly his door just fucking opens and there's somebody there, some man there. And he says, we're going to the hill. And
man, I hadn't really considered that his memories of this could be faked. Or not faked, but like it could be skewed, right? Like that, because he's beginning to doubt it. And our friends over at Carrie and Wayward are in season 8 of Supernatural, and they just had a really interesting conversation about memory and trauma, and how trauma can affect your memory greatly. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, what is like is Mulder going, like, does he actually remember these correctly? Like, do we trust this narrator, right? Like, is this what actually happened? And like, I think from the TV show perspective, probably, like, the show wants us to see that this actually happened, but at the same time, from a character perspective, I wonder where the details get fuzzy in his brain, and how much of the stuff he thinks he remembers that he doesn't actually remember. It's kind of fascinating. Yeah. I didn't think about that while I was watching the episode until you mentioned it. So
yeah, this episode, I mean, as we go through it, we learn how much he's learned to doubt himself. And there is almost, I mean, we'll get to it, but when he talks about trusting Scully and stuff, it's, I'm going to keep saying Sully because my cat.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he goes to the hill, and we realize Mulder has talked about how he has connections in Congress and all this stuff. And now he's going to meet with a Senator Matheson,
played by just a little peek behind the curtain. I kind of pitched pretty hard to do for me and Chris to cover Justified as a podcast.
Oh yeah.
And this is the main character's dad on Justified.
He did look a little familiar. I don't know if I know from that or from something else, but he just seemed like one of those guys.
He's but I look, because I at first I didn't recognize him, because on this, like, he's very like polished and poised and senatorial, and then, you know, Justified, he's a backwards fucking hick. So like, it took me a minute to like put the pieces together. For a minute I thought he was like a guy from Twin Peaks, but he was not. So yeah, like, and when I looked up his IMDb page, he's been on fucking everything. Like, he's one of those actors. So yeah, this is the guy that's been supporting the senator, and they talk about, he's listening to Bach. He asks Mulder to name the tune, and Mulder like gets it off by one. And he talks about how this piece from Bach was the first piece of music that they put on the Voyager, and that it'll be out there for 4.5 billion years unless another alien civilization intercepts it, and in which case this will be the first piece of music they hear. And he kind of talks about how meaningful that is for him, and it's interesting to have this type of conversation on a high level government dude, right? Like, imagine AOC calling you into a room and being like, we got to find the aliens. You're like, AOC, you know, don't we have more important things to do? What about the unions? What about Palestine? And she's like, we're going to work on that. You need to find the aliens. Okay.
Aliens, yeah. 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 Okay.
Okay, AOC, anything that you say.
I'll go for yeah, whatever you say, AOC. If it's you, I'll do it.
I hope if they reboot X-Files, I hope that Senator Matheson turns into AOC in the reboot. Yeah. Like, I think that would be just amazing. Yeah.
Well, Mulder says to him, like, you know, you've put yourself at risk for so long, or your reputation at risk for so long to kind of pull for me, and I must have disappointed you. And before that we can get any further into this, the senator writes down something on a piece of paper, which is they might be listening. And then he's like, you want to crank that Soldier Boy again? And he puts Bach on again so they can go in the corner. And he's like, yeah, they're listening to us. So here's what you need to know. And he gives him the mission. He gives us and explains, hey, we just received this message. We think that something just responded back. But there is a Blue Beret, like, extermination force that's going to be sent down there to destroy all that evidence and anything that might show up. So I'm telling you this now so that you can go on this mission. You'll probably have about a 24-hour head start to get down there and gather any evidence that you can.
Man, it would take me... In 2024, it's easier than ever to do anything, right? And it would take me much longer than 24 hours to get to Puerto Rico, I think. Yeah. I would be very intimidated if you told me you have 24 hours to also need to do an investigation. Like, you only have so much time. But not for Mulder.
He's always ready to go.
He's just ready to rock, man. The fact that we're going to see it in a bit after the next scene, but, like, he shows up, like he gets a ride from a dude on the back of a truck. Like, how did you arrange that, Mulder? Like, how did...
He's just one of those guys.
It's just one of those dudes. We go back over to the FBI headquarters where we go to Skinner's office. Him and the Smoking Man are listening to Skinner interview Scully on a tape about where Mulder is and come to the conclusion that she doesn't know. Mulder has disappeared. He didn't show up for work. So they're questioning Scully about that. And she's concerned. And that concern tells them, like, that she doesn't know where he is. Because if she knew, she wouldn't be so upset about it. This is one of the few times we see Skinner a lot in this episode. Not a lot, but we see him a lot more than we have been. I am still on team anti-hunk. This dude is so anti-hunky to me.
I'm still on team hunk.
This is going to be the thing that divorces us as a podcast, I think.
It's fine. I'm not going to battle for it. I'm just awaiting the inevitable. That's all.
Okay. Well, I'm also awaiting the inevitable of you to be wrong.
for me to suddenly say, I take it back.
One of us dies. And, like, I'm going to... The other person,
it's
like
the only
Mars,
way to end this feud.
That's the only way. We're gonna take this
we'll
shit.
Have to get him on the podcast.
Take it to the girl, Mitch Pileggi. Do you consider yourself a hunk? It would be a
actually.
Very...
We need to get all the women he's ever dated on the podcast.
There you go. Absolutely.
Now that's an idea.
This sounds like how Kendrick makes diss songs. Like, we're just gonna find out everything we can about Mitch Pileggi.
Get to his people.
Mulder shows up to this place, like we mentioned, on the back of a truck. Mm-hmm. He can't get.
He's,
to...
Yeah, he's. He, I. It's a little silly. But I do love the idea of him rolling out into the jungle in the back of a truck and then climbing through the woods to get to this radio tower isolated out here. There's something just a little bit fun about it, you know?
It makes him look so much more resourceful than the character probably is. Like, this dude is like, he went to Oxford. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's not climbing.
He's a nerd,
He's not climbing through the jungle. The dude is the nerdiest guy in the world.
He's got double denim and the Tims on, and he's climbing through the jungle.
If Final Fantasy VIII existed at this time, he would be playing it so often.
He's only a couple years off. He's probably playing FF6. That's what he should be doing.
That's what he should be doing.
He's out here in the jungle.
And so he eventually makes his way to the control room, cuts the door, goes in, and the power is off, although the machines are still working. There's some sort of power happening here. And he specifically mentions it doesn't look like anybody has been here. Like, there's a musty smell in the air. There's just no evidence that anybody has been here. Meanwhile, Scully goes to Mulder's apartment to look for clues as to where he could go. She listens to a message, which doesn't really go anywhere. And then she accesses his computer, which of course is password protected.
This is so funny, dude.
First guess is spooky, which is just a very funny password.
Which might as well be like the slur that people use for murder.
Right?
She's like, that'll be it. It'll be spooky. And then she thinks Samantha. Okay, better guess.
Sure.
That's fine. And that's a logical leap to make. From here, this has always been such a funny scene because it's just her third guess. And I get that we don't want to waste a bunch of time with her guessing shit. But her third guess is trust no one. The one is the number one and not O-N-E.
Perfect.
And I just think that that's so funny that she didn't start by typing it like out the words. She thought, no, I'm dropping the number. That's the kind of thing that Mulder would do.
Mulder, this is how Mulder does. Like, I've seen him.
And she got it.
She nails it, dude. She absolutely nails it. She opens up the file. It's the same file that the senator gave Mulder. It's this printout from the machine showing like galactic coordinates. She starts hearing somebody coming, so she very quickly prints it out. And then these two agents come into the house. Mulder's apartment has been under surveillance, and they wonder why she's there. And she's like, "Oh, I'm just there to feed the fish." These two agents like pick up this file and like are like, "This is garbage," which makes me like question the FBI as an entire organization, where they're not even curious about this. They throw it away, and Scully, again with the spycraft, like does this elaborate fish food routine where she spills fish food, grabs this out of the trash can to sweep the fish food into, pretends to throw it away, and instead just stuffs it up her arm. Extremely great. I love it. Thank you, Scully, for giving
great
us this
stuff. She just manages to outmaneuver them all, and then they get out of there, and we cut over to her showing it to an analyst. I'm not quite sure who this guy was, who talks about the wow signal, which was, as he explains, this sound recorded on one of these, you know, radio towers or whatever from outer space, that was 30 times stronger than all the background noise. He says, like, "Oh, my friend so-and-so discovered it," like the real name of the real guy. I just like that the script made them friends. But yeah, I think it's cool when they bring in real stuff like that.
Yeah, they Forrest Gump it, right? Like, say what you will about Forrest Gump, but it is fun sometimes to see something in from real history. And yeah, she asked him, like, "Can you tell where it's from?" And he's like, "Not really. Like, there's a bunch of different places that have this kind of ability to track these signals." And he name checks the place in Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, Mulder, who is now very sweaty,
he's
super sweaty. He's trying to like thread the tape onto the tape machine. And then it's like, looks over and he's like, "Oh, there's the bathroom. Let me go see if that works." And as he opens the door,
it's like a shit, like you wouldn't believe.
Oh, dude, like, can you imagine like traveling from Puerto Rico? Like, I don't know, man, you'd be crammed up.
He's crammed up.
As he opens the door, he finds a whole ass person who's been hiding in this bathroom this entire time. This is Jorge.
I'm just confused. What was Jorge doing there?
I don't know.
How did he get in there?
Why was he here at all?
Was he abducted and then dropped back in here? Because the place was locked up. Mulder had used bolt cutters to get in, and it clearly had been undisturbed. Now, my Spanish is not very good, so all I got was him saying there were lights in the sky. That was about the only thing I picked up from it.
Yeah. So I don't know if the implication here is that he was abducted and then he was put back. Like when they started receiving the signal, was he put back? So he's only been there for like a day or something. And that's why he's, but like, again, this is headcanon. Like, the show doesn't go into any of this. Maybe they just wanted a dead body. Like, they just wanted someone to show up and be a dead body eventually. But yeah, Jorge doesn't speak English. He's obviously terrified. Mulder is able to get his name, and the fact that there were men, and as he gets frustrated trying to communicate with Mulder, he grabs Mulder's marker and on the wall like draws a typical ET head, like the little green man head. This dude has been through the wars, apparently.
Yeah. When you start drawing that stuff on the bathroom wall,
It's over. We haven't really talked about it. Mulder has throughout this been making audio tapes. He's been recording his notes during this whole process. He continues to do that, but now he has to babysit Jorge, who just likes to push buttons on this complicated equipment. Don't touch the big red button, man. What are you doing? As he's doing that, the tape machine turns itself on again, and Jorge is absolutely terrified. The tape machine starts screeching this bad noise. Mulder rushes over to turn it off, and as he turns around, he realizes Jorge has run outside into this giant storm that's been happening around them.
Yeah, and Mulder quickly tries to pursue after him. And within, I don't know, I think it's just been like 2 minutes, Mulder then finds him petrified, body paralysis, dead, like rigor mortis, looking under a tree as if, you know, he was raising his hands to shield himself from something and then died.
Yes. Not good. It's very, very not good. But
definitely
poor Jorge.
Not good.
he's just here to show up and die. Just like women on Supernatural.
Damn, dude.
Sorry.
Supernatural had women, and X-Files has Jorge.
Oh, God. Poor Jorge. Meanwhile, Scully is at the Miami International Airport, and I absolutely adore everything that happens here.
So into it,
So, first and foremost, she's scouting for people that are following her. She's using her compact mirror. to like look behind her as she brushes up her blush, I guess, her makeup. She gets up and she starts walking around. She notices this couple that like get up and follow her. As she doubles back, she realizes they stop. So she kind of bird dogs them pretty quick. And then she goes over to a payphone. A payphone, by the way, for our younger listeners, is a device that you used to put quarters into and where you're able to make one phone call. Sometimes it costs 25 cents. One time they raised it up to 85 cents, which seems like an incredible amount of change to be carrying at any time. And now they have disappeared entirely. If you watch Doctor Who, that's what should be inside that phone box, but it's not. So,
gotcha. I haven't used a phone booth since elementary school, and I just had this memory. I was in Disney and got separated from my dad and my sister. It was just the three of us. My sister was for soccer tournament. Anyway, I had enough change to make one phone call, and instead of calling my dad or my sister, who both had cell phones, I did not. I called my mom, who was back in Massachusetts. not in Florida.
Who could not do anything.
And she was like, well, where is dad? I had just gotten on the shuttle to the hotel like earlier than my dad. He was waiting in line, and I scampered off without him. But I just remember, like, why didn't I just fucking call my dad?
Call your dad.
Why did I call my mom?
I remember when I moved back to Louisiana, which was like 2009, which was when you started, like, by that point you start seeing these are starting to disappear. And I went to I was way out in the country, and I went to like to stop to get gas or water or something. And they had like a full on phone booth, not just like a rack of them or anything, but like a actual phone booth. And I was just like, where in the hell did this come from? Like, why? It's amazing that this is still here. And then I went back there a couple of weeks later, and it was gone. Like, that was I caught it right at the end of its life.
Maybe you caught its ghost haunting that place.
Maybe the ghost of a phone booth. Man, that's a good story, huh? That'd be good.
Yeah, right there.
So she goes to a phone booth.
Yes, and she calls Mulder, and I thought she was giving him some just like phony numbers, but she's giving coordinates. It is phony information, though, as we're going to learn in a minute. But as a viewer, I thought, what is she saying? She just says like a bunch of codes.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out she actually does manage to lose her tail here. But then we hear the tail say like, oh, they just got information back because Mulder's phone was tapped. That information was just relayed to the tails. Now they know where she's going to some complete, you know, it was a total misdirection.
Yes.
So Scully has, dude, she's working everybody over here.
She shook the tail. Which
She
shook the tail. It's amazing. I love all of this stuff. This is so good. Like just knowing that, you know, planting false information, redirecting everybody. It's so, so good. Mulder, who is now extremely sweaty and sleeveless.
Yeah, he's sleeveless. I don't know if he was sleeveless the whole time underneath that denim shirt.
100%. Yeah.
I feel like he cut him off.
my grandfather wore the same shirt, or the same exact. He had multiple copies of the same shirt, this like denim shirt, and he would buy them. And then he would have my grandmother cut off all of the sleeves so that he was just sleeveless all the time, and like hem it up so it looks nice. And like that was the only shirt that he ever wore, which is mind-boggling to me.
Man, dude. Yeah. I love that.
It must make like getting up in the morning just like 20% easier. Of like, I don't have to pull
like
anything.
You got
out
a
closet.
Uniform for yourself. Yeah, you know? Yeah. I'm always buying stupid T-shirts or like different pairs of jeans. What am I doing? You know, I should just have one outfit. I do laundry.
Oh man, I kind of kicked it up for Italy. Like I tried to dress up nice, and I don't know if you know this about the Europeans, Chris, but they're all a very fashionable people.
Yeah, I wouldn't even try, dude. I would have just gone full tourist. It's the only way to protect yourself.
I wasn't able to snap a picture, but I found as we were roaming around Rome, there's all these little shops and everything. We saw some cool kicks. I was like, ooh, let's go look at these sneakers. Like maybe there's some stuff. Autumn found this pair and we were like, oh wow, this looks really amazing. And she kind of picks it up and flips it up, €750. We're like, no. But right next to the cool kick store was the anime store.
Oh hell yeah!
It had a like larger than life size statue of whoever I don't know the guy from One Piece. I just recognize the
Luffy. Okay,
okay, cool. Yeah. So like directly in the middle, and then like just a sea of T-shirts of all like any anime slash like nerd culture thing. It was insane.
That's fun.
Anyway, so
where are we? Mulder, he's doing recordings.
He's sleeveless. Yeah,
he's sleeveless. Right.
He's brought Jorge back to the shop, and he starts recording notes about the state of the body in case it's deteriorated later. And I think this is absolutely adorable. He's been making these audio notes this entire time. This is the first time that he says Scully.
Yeah, now we realize he's just been talking to Scully.
He's been talking to Scully, his buddy, the whole time. Even though they're not partners anymore, they're still partners. And I just find this absolutely adorable. It's so cute.
It's something about it is just very endearing. It's like this was all for her, you know?
Yeah.
And as he says, I think, he actually says it here. So as he's going through it, he's finding there's no, was he struck by lightning? No, there's no burn marks. There's no indication of what killed him. He looks like he's been frightened to death. And then he says something like, again, Scully, nothing but evidence. And again, no evidence at all. All of this stuff that on a first glance reveals so much about the strange happenings, but there's nothing concrete. Now he's just starting to doubt himself. And he goes along with the, on the tape recorder, just starts just saying his self-doubt, everything, or suspecting everyone, and everything begins to wear you down. He's starting to doubt the truth. And then he says, before, I could only trust myself. Now I can only trust you, and they've taken you away from me.
Oh, man. Oh, good, man. I'm still not like into the romantic aspect of their relationship, that I think they'll probably lean on in the show at some point, but I can definitely see, like, if I was making a AMV, right? Like I would pull this line, even though at this exact point, like, I don't think it's meant romantically. It's still
just that bond, you know, and that bond 100%, of trust. And also it's not even just the trust of Sully. Sully, God, sorry, Cat. Scully, it's not just Scully that he trusts. That's already been established last season. It's more so, I think, to reflect that he doesn't trust himself anymore, which has never been the case.
And even that goes so far as to like go back to the reason that he started this, like the reason that has this fascination was because of the abduction of Samantha, his sister. And he even questions himself now on that, of like, he's been doing nothing but chasing those little green men. Now he doesn't know what he would do if they appeared to him again. And as he says that, like Jorge's body begins to shake. And then we see the same kind of light pattern that we saw Samantha get abducted by, this red light outside that's pulsing. The tape machine kicks back on. The printer starts printing. The tape machine is making these incredibly weird noises. Poor Jorge is knocked off the table, which is a bummer for poor Jorge. The front door is slammed open. Mulder rushes over to kind of jam it closed. And as the red lights disappear, everything goes kind of quiet for a moment. And then the white light appears and the door opens itself almost telekinetically. And we see the same thing that he saw as a child, this alien form, this alien body, this little green man.
Dude, this like skinny little skater boy comes in.
This fucking emo kid.
This emo kid. It's actually, I think this is kind of spooky. It's really silly, but it's just the
it would be more spooky if Panic at the Disco wasn't playing, I think.
I think so.
That Panic at the Disco kind of changes the mood.
I think that was an odd choice. But I think, you know, it's so skinny that it's like a little spooky because it just doesn't seem natural. And we don't see the whole thing. We really just see the bottom portion of it. But despite it almost an eye-rolly thing here, I still like it.
I think this is very spooky. I think this is very good, especially because like Mulder runs to his pack and he grabs his gun and his gun doesn't work, even though it's like fully loaded. It's just clicking. I like, you know, that these entities can affect the reality around them in some way. And we fade out, like the light goes bright, and then the next thing we know, Mulder is knocked unconscious and Scully is standing above him. And
did she have to hitch a ride on the back of a truck too? Did she climb through the jungle? Well, she has a car, so I'm not quite sure she just drove up through the fucking gate.
I am so.
Or was it Jorge's car? I don't know. They just get in the car.
They just get in the car later. This is some dumb shit that I should let go of, but they made such a point of like, you know, she's the doctor, right? Like she's medically trained, and the first thing that she says to Mulder is, "I thought you were dead." Or I was worried that you were dead. And I'm like, there's several different ways you can figure out that he's not. And then she's like, "Do you know where you are? Do you know who you are?" And like stands him up. And I'm like, so you're worried he's dead, but you're not worried that he has a concussion of any kind, or like any kind of broken bones, or like a neck injury. And again, I should not be bothered by it. I should not care, Chris. I don't know how to turn that part of my brain off sometimes, but Mulder at this point is, as he gets up, he is super excited. He feels like he actually has evidence. He has this body that he thinks they can glean some sort of evidence for. He's got the printouts. He's got the tape. He's got all of this stuff. He's super excited about it. Scully can barely keep up, and they start hearing these noises, and she's like, oh my God, is it them? Is it them? Are they coming back? And he's like, no, this is something different. And they look outside, and here comes the military.
Yeah. It's these blue beret motherfuckers. And this escalates so quickly. Like, Mulder wants to gather up the evidence. He wants to grab the body and get out of there. And Scully's like, there is no time. They're going to kill us. Like, yeah. We gotta go.
They're going to murder us.
We get a full on fucking action sequence here. Mulder grabs what little worthless evidence he can, you know? And not calling it worthless. I read worthless from it in my notes. It's not worthless. He gets some printouts. And then they jump into the car that's out there. Again, don't know whose car it is. Not important. And then they just peel off into the jungle. These men pull up in their big military truck and just start unloading on them, firing into the jungle. And then we just get a race down this mountain, I guess. And somehow they're able to escape.
I love this because they're in a fucking Bronco. And I don't know who or what possessed the stunt guys or the the people in charge of shooting these scenes, but like they put this Bronco through some work, man. Like there's one scene where like they're going down a hill and that motherfucker is like bouncing. I'm like, I didn't even know a Bronco could do that. And like there's when they cut to the interior, and it's obviously not David Duchovny driving or anything, but like they've obviously directed him to like bounce around. Like he's
bouncing up and down like you wouldn't believe.
I fucking love it, dude. It's so good. And they lose him. They lose the soldiers, so they are somehow able to get back to America. Oh, also
back to the airport, back on a plane, no problem.
I don't think that we talked about this when Mulder is like, we got to get this evidence, and Scully is like, they're gonna hear, they're gonna kill us, and she's like, and she says, there's no way we can get the dead body through the airport.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, Scully.
Okay,
fair enough.
Sorry, Jorge, we'll see you later when they resurrect you for your memories.
Sorry, man.
Yeah, so good. There's no way we can get this dead body through the airport, Mulder. We skip right into, we gotta just smash cut over to the FBI headquarters. Mulder is being chewed out by Skinner. The smoking man is in the room. He's being chewed out for, you know, basically ruining the case that they've been working on, his actual like criminal case that he should have been there for. And Mulder like yells back and is like, you've left me there. I could have arrested these dude on 40 counts, but like you still had me doing this. Like you just left me there. And I don't quite understand this, and I wanted to talk to you about it. I don't understand the dynamic here, because I've always kind of assumed the smoking man had like either leverage or had some sort of authority over Skinner, just because of the things that we've seen him do, which is like show up in mysterious places, have access to this like secret Pentagon storage facility. But what happens in this scene is like Mulder yells back and it changes something with Skinner. Like you can kind of see in his face, and he says, you need to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, because he realizes, oh, they tapped Mulder's phone, and now suddenly he's just like, what the fuck? I think that Skinner didn't know anything about the phone tap.
Okay, so because that's right, because Mulder says, you tapped my phone, which is a crime, and the smoking man walks over and is like, you're going to leave here with nothing, and that's when Skinner turns. Okay, so it must be that like he was left out of some of this, like they went to, like the smoking man went too far somehow.
He must not, obviously, the smoking man obviously has power and he's very mysterious, but he's not a direct superior to Skinner probably, so that's why Skinner is just like, get the hell out of my office.
Yeah, like I'm not, like at my company, I'm not the boss of the warehouse guys, but I often tell them what to do. Right, like I'm like, hey warehouse guys, you need to go deliver this thing, but I'm not their boss. I get it. Okay, right. And if they found out I was tapping their phones, they'd probably be a little upset about it.
They'd probably be a little mad too. Yeah, and the smoking man just lights a cigarette and walks out in silence, doesn't say another word.
Yeah.
And then I like this because the first thing that Mulder said is like, dude, I had enough evidence to bust that case open within 3 days. Like you were having me sit there for weeks and weeks and weeks working on this. And then when all is said and done, Mulder's expecting to get tossed out. Skinner just tells him, report back to your assignment. I don't think we have enough evidence on that yet, which to me was just him saying, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it.
Yeah.
Like, keep working on whatever you're secretly working on, but I'm not going to acknowledge it. I'm not going to talk about it. But if these guys are tapping your phone and they're doing illegal shit that I don't like, then clearly you're on to something. And I think that this is the first sign of Skinner kind of getting some trust.
Yeah.
He's getting on the team a little bit. He doesn't really know what Mulder's up to necessarily, but if the smoking man doesn't like it, then Skinner's okay with it.
Exactly. Yeah. Skinner is the new Bobby.
Skinner's a new Bobby, dude. He really is. I really think he is. And you don't have to think he's a hunk, absolutely not. But I think that you will grow to like him as a character.
we go over to Boulder back in the same, presumably like surveillance van that we saw him in the very beginning of the episode, mm-hmm. except this time Scully is there and he's hooked up the tape that he managed to secure from Puerto Rico. And of course it's blank. There's nothing on it. Like we knew it. And she comes up with like, maybe an electrical storm degaused it. And I'm like, that's not anything, but whatever. It's the X-Files. Like, of course they don't have any evidence at the end of the episode. Right. And this, like you would expect, I think if you're, based on everything that he's done so far in this episode, at this point, like you would think that it would be the same thing where he would immediately go back into the kind of doubting mode. But instead, he's kind of got his old confidence back. And he says, I may not have the X-Files, but I still have my work and I still have you. So even though they can't get any evidence here and Scully leaves and he goes back to this surveillance thing, like he's still... He knows, like, he's still on the case, so to speak. Like, he's still got it.
He's got it back. He has trust in himself again.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we get, like, a lengthy audio of just two guys talking about strippers again.
Yeah. And then he leans in, he's listening to some, like, static in the background or something. I'm like, okay. But he got his confidence back. And that's really, and Scully squeezes his hand before she walks out. It's very nice. Mulder's back. It only took one episode. The X-Files are not back.
No, not yet.
The program itself has not returned. But in a way, you know, Scully and Mulder are kind of back on the same side. They're always on the same side, but now that they're you know, they've rejoined in their trust. Yes. Mulder has got his confidence back, and maybe Skinner is starting to kind of turn to their side. Maybe he doesn't believe in little green men, but he doesn't like the smoking man.
Exactly,
that's good enough.
Yeah. He wants, you know, he may not necessarily like Mulder's methods, but it's better than, you know, putting surveillance on one of his agents' homes. I think this is a really great episode. I think like Mulder's character arc throughout this episode is really, really great. I think it's handled very, very well. I think it's written very well. I wish that like we got the same kind of character development or growth with Scully in this.
And I hope we do, but throughout this episode I do like that she's the rock.
Exactly.
Like, she never doubted Mulder, and she never doubted herself, and she has to put her skills to the test to you know, outthwart these people who are watching them, and so she can be his rock until he gets himself back. So while I do hope we get to see more arcs for her, having her be that like solid, she's the reason that Mulder's able to get back, you know. Yes, he goes off on this little adventure by himself, but you can see him start to despair when the evidence is lost again, but because Scully is there for him, he's able to find confidence in himself once more.
And just, you know, also getting us back to the reason that he does any of this, which is a sister, right? Like introducing more of those concepts, showing us exactly what happened. Maybe we don't actually know. All of that stuff is just super good. Like it's a great episode of the X-Files. I can really see like if this is the direction that the series is going to take from here on out, like I'm which I'm hopeful that it is. I can see why the show got better and better as it went. So I am into it. How about you?
Hell yeah. Yeah. Great episode. I'm happy to be back. It was nice. You know, we took a couple weeks off, but to come back to such a banger is good. And it almost feels like, because it's the beginning of a new season, we had a short break. Like, it almost feels like we just had to wait for a season finale or a series premiere. It's exciting. It's exciting. It's good. Exciting times.
Yeah. Thank you everybody for listening. We very, very much appreciate it. Thank you to our patrons over at patreon.com/monsterofthe week for continuing to support us. If you'd like to join up, you can get episodes of this podcast early or access to our community Discord server, which you can chat about anything. You can just go in there and talk about anime if you want to. I have that channel muted, but I mean it's there. Like you can definitely.
We're in there. We're doing work every day.
We're doing work every single day. You could also like maybe respond to some of my posts on the music channel.
Yeah.
Nobody else has. Everyone else just pretends I don't. I say like new hip hop, and people are like, eh, whatever. It's very sad. I'm just all
alone. You got
to
hit me with the Apple Music link.
If you knew every song that I send you, if I ever send you a song,
I know you go to YouTube.
I spend the effort to do it. Yeah. Thank you to everybody who's been listening and leaving reviews and commenting. We're sorry we missed a couple of weeks, but we're back and we love you. So remember, everybody, to stay spooky. We'll be right back. Chris Mosier.
Hey.
Hey,
I just had to pause because I almost just yelled again, and I realized I had moved way back into the mic. I'm like, no, we can't yell from this range.
It's always good energy when we start screaming.
Jeremy!
Oh,
you're back.
I'm back.
You left the cunch.
I left the cunch.
You've returned.
I left the entire cunch.
You know, I've said two awful things to you recently, cunch and playtime, and both times that I said those things to you, I didn't plan it ahead of time. It just came out in the second that I began typing it. And I wanted you to know that.
Do you think that listeners understand what cunch means, just given the context of the sentences that we've used so far?
Given the context of you leaving the cunch?
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, we didn't record a podcast for a couple weeks. And I think that they know that there's only one good reason for that, and it's because you left the cunch.
I just hate the word so much. I hate saying it. I hate hearing it.
Oh, it's awful. It's terrible.
It's an awful word. And then you mentioned the playtime thing. I think specifically we should tell people that you said... I said, do you want to record tomorrow or do you have time to record on Sunday or something? And you're like, yeah, I've been missing playtime or something like that.
Yeah,
like it,
dude.
You made it sound very sexual in the text message.
It's so sick. I'm a sicko. So my point with that is that since I don't plan this stuff, it's not like I try to like think of funny things to say, which I guess would be, that'd be one way of doing it if I'm just trying to be funny off. But no, this is coming off the cuff. It's just coming out, which means that deep inside I'm a sicko. I think that's what that's revealing.
Absolute sicko. Like, I feel like,
because I'm not putting any thought into it. It's just like, it's just nature.
When you call it playtime, I feel like you're talking about something where you're you just have a shirt on with no pants when you're kind of Winnie the Pooh situation and you're having playtime. You know what I'm saying? Maybe there's some sort of food involved somehow. I'm not sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, big time.
We just made all of our listeners want to leave the cunch.
To get out of the cunch and go have some quiet playtime somewhere by themselves away from us.
It's been so long since we've recorded that there's been an entire rat beef that came and went. One of the most astounding moments of the modern era. I went to Italy and got basically remarried.
I know. Well, so
I don't know what you've been doing at all. I have no clue. You haven't been texting me at all. Like, I don't know what's been going on in the life of Chris Mosier.
I replayed Final Fantasy VIII.
Of course you did.
Cry.
Not a single time.
No, well, towards the end I got a little teary. There's this one particular spot in Disc 3 that always gets me, and it didn't get me this time because I'm like, I'm different. I've grown up. I don't know. I had to do so much shit with my family. Replayed FF8. That was good. Me and Jess watched almost an entire Gundam show together. That was big for her.
I was about to say, because the last time we spoke about Gundam, I specifically asked you if Jess was into it, and you were like, absolutely not.
No.
She's not into this.
Crazy. So speaking of that, so we're watching the newest one. I've been watching all the old ones, and I'm like, she's not going to watch an anime from the 80s. Let's just watch the newest, prettiest, shiniest one. And just as we started that's when the shipping war on Tumblr began, where every year, I guess they do this poll on Tumblr, and Destiel from Supernatural, Dean Castiel, they win every year because they're like the Tumblr OGs. Like, that's like the ship OG for that website. I'm not saying that they were the first, but you know what I mean. And this year, for whatever reason, Suleta and Miorine from...
Is that Gundam Witch?
So two lesbians from the Gundam and the two main characters. And it was just wild seeing first, like, and I'm just seeing all this stuff secondhand, like reposted to Twitter from the Gundam community. And at first it was all this like anger from the Supernatural fans being like, what the fuck is this? Why are you posting this? Or why is this beating Destiel? You guys are just being bitter. Like, what is going on here? So there's just a lot of hater energy then circled back around to a lot of these same Supernatural fans then watching this Gundam show and being like, wait.
Oh, perfect. Perfect.
Wait, this is great.
This is actually really good.
It seems like it's had a happy ending.
Which, because I've watched 3 episodes of that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
What is it, the main character and somebody, or
it's the girl with the red hair and the girl with the white hair?
Okay, well, I don't remember that much detail, to be honest with you, so I don't
they got the two of them get the most screen time. If you started from the beginning, you probably watched episode 0, which is when she's like a baby and it's like a flashback essentially.
I did not see any baby action. I started when she like goes to the school or whatever. She has to have the big battle with the dude, and she wins.
Yeah, when she beats the dude, like the conditions of the duel are like, whoever wins is going to be the fiance of this girl with white hair, Miorine. And red hair girl wins. And
speaking of shipping and Supernatural, did you hear the big news out of the fandom?
Dude, this, again, this... I like You know, I feel like I'm such a Supernatural hater sometimes.
You are. Like, oh, absolutely.
Not even centered. Like, I'm a huge Supernatural hater. Like, I love it, but I also hate it deeply. And I just feel like all that, so much of that was just washed away suddenly when I saw the Supernatural news.
Yeah, so Ty Olson and DJ Qualls, who played Benny and Garth on Supernatural, respectively, are getting married. Like,
dude, I didn't even know they knew each other.
So it's so funny because I've been watching, like, the reactions of this in various, like, Supernatural communities, and, like, a while back, so they met each other at a con. As far as I know, they never shared screen time on Supernatural. They were never in an episode together. Like, maybe,
yeah, I don't think so.
Maybe there was an episode that they both appeared in, but, like, they weren't in the same scene. They met at a Supernatural con, and apparently, like, one of their first or second meetings, DJ Garth, I'm just going to say Garth and Benny.
It's easier for us if you say the character names.
Calling somebody DJ is really weird. But no, DJ was like, I'm going to Turkey on this trip with my friend. And Ty Olson was like, hey, can I go with you? DJ was like, I would never have the balls to do that. And apparently since then, they've been basically inseparable. But the funniest thing is that years ago, they posted a picture of themselves kissing from a convention. And because of the way the Supernatural, like, actors are, everybody assumed it was a joke. Like, nobody, which is just,
it was a bit.
They thought it was a bit, but it was true love. Everybody thought it was a bit, but it was true love. It was actual deep love. And I think that's the greatest thing that the Supernatural community that's ever come out of the show Supernatural.
It's really funny. I saw a post saying, like, oh, for years, people were trying to ship these two, like, real actors, which I think they meant Jensen and Misha.
Correct.
And, like, meanwhile, like, just off screen, we didn't realize that it was actually happening.
Yeah, it's funny because I think that's like four couples that have come out of the, like, IRL couples, because
Jared and Jen, and then Jared and Jen. So Sam and Ruby, and then Chuck and Rowena.
Chuck and Rowena, who just had a child.
Wow, congratulations to them.
Speaking of Rowena, just a shout out for you to watch the Netflix series Dead Boy Detectives. Because it's very Supernatural coded. It's got a lot of Supernatural influence, and Rowena is in it. She's amazing. So.
Oh, dope. Who directed that? Is that Richard?
So there's an episode that he directed. The show was created by Jeremy Carver, who is, like, one of the big Supernatural people.
Notice how I just said Richard.
Yeah. Nobody needs to know his last name.
Do not try to tackle that last name.
Nobody needs to bother with that.
We're not getting it wrong again on a new podcast.
So much has happened.
Drake's been killed by Kendrick.
Drake has been murdered. Like, people shot up his house.
Somebody calls you a certified pedophile. I'm sorry. You can't come back from that.
There's one thing for somebody to make a diss song about you, and then there's another thing where that diss song becomes the song of the summer.
Like, it's the song of the summer, dude. It's a banger.
I saw it being played at Disney World. I see videos of it, but, like, there's a kids bop version now. Like, there's, dude, like,
it's,
I see,
it's over for you when they got a kids bop version of your diss track.
Main stage at EDC in Vegas, they did a fucking remix of They Are Not Like Us. They're Not Like Us.
Dude, that's
crazy.
I mean,
when you're doing fucking, you know, I don't know, techno drops of the diss track, I just can't imagine how we got here. And it's,
I don't know.
Have you
clocked into BBL Drizzy? Because that one's really been making me laugh.
Dude, this is so, when me and, so all of this is happening when me and Autumn are in Italy, right?
That was crazy. You're like the one person I could be talking to you about this, but I didn't want to bother you when you're out of touch, you know?
But the only, like, every single time we had anything, like, we had a break, right? Like, so, when we're, like, specifically, we're on a train to go from one city to the next, right? All I did was go look up BBL Drizzy memes and the Kendrick and Drake memes. Like, that was the only thing. Like, I was burning through my phone's battery, just showing stuff to her, getting frustrated when we'd go through a mountain because my service would die. And, like, it was.
You got to do it. It's the culture, man. You got to get caught up.
Dude, it was absolutely insane. I just.
And I feel like I don't get to call myself a hater anymore. I think I'm just, like, maybe a little bitter. I'm a little, a little feisty occasionally, but just the amount of hater energy that Kendrick brought was just, it's just really dwarfs anything I could ever imagine.
When he said that he doesn't like the way Drake says the N-word,
yeah,
I feel like that's, it's
that was
over.
It.
It's
that
over.
Was game over.
It's absolutely over. I just don't know how you come back from that. Like, I just don't know. Like, what do you say? What do you do?
Yeah. And then it only got worse from there.
Yeah, and then you know, the pedophile stuff, and yeah, it's so, so bad. I don't know, man. Just, it's insane. Like, it's been, And then, like, there's also, like, the reaction to it where everybody is like, this is just a distraction. The record labels are stealing money from black people. And I'm just like, okay, yes.
I mean,
let's get into
they're
it.
They're always doing something, you know?
let's just get into it. Like, that's yeah, it's so good.
But I want to hear about Italy. How long were you gone for?
So we were supposed to be gone for 8 days. When we tried to leave on Thursday, our plane had a bird strike.
Dude, would you send me a picture? I didn't realize that wasn't that was from Google. I thought you had taken.
No,
the picture.
No.
It was like a pterodactyl. I'm like, oh my god, what?
a bird went into the engine, and we took off, and I was like, we're not going very high. Like, this seems a little weird. And we took off from our local airport, which is a smaller airport, so we're going to connect mm-hmm. through Atlanta. And then it just. Like, we just circled around for a while, and I'm like, well, this seems weird. Like, it doesn't seem like we're going anywhere. And then, sure enough, the pilot gets on. We had a bird strike. Land the plane, deplane everybody. Had to pick our luggage back up. They rebooked us on everything, fortunately, so we just left the next day. But, like, we lost a day.
Yeah, it sucks.
So, my plan was to, like, land in Naples, like, relax for the evening. We're gonna have, like, all afternoon and evening. We had a hotel in Naples booked. Like, we're gonna have a nice dinner. I had some places picked out. All of that got scrapped. So instead, we fly for, like, 16,000 hours, land in Naples, and then train for 2.5 hours to get to our spot, and then get picked up by...
So, I imagine, like, the train is, like, a picturesque journey, but I don't know if that's actually true. Was the train nice?
So, it's interesting, because, like, you think it's gonna be a picturesque journey, but, like, whenever... Like, imagine any time you've ever seen a train, right? Like, imagine, like, the stuff that surrounds the train. It's very, like, commercial, right? Like, so occasionally you would look out of the window and there'd be, like, the ocean and a cliff and this beautiful picturesque town. 90% of the time, though, you're just looking at, like, some mountains in the distance, which are dope. Don't get me wrong. Very dope. But also, like, just trash around the trains, you know? And it's, I'm not saying, like, Italy is trashy or anything. Please don't come at me, Italians, please.
Modern society.
Yeah. A lot of graffiti, which
not
I don't...
like it's France, okay? It's not
dirty. It's just nasty. No. But it was like you would look out the window, and then there's like a lot of times that you go under mountains or whatever. But our first day was a lot of travel. Just again, plane, train, and automobiles, literally. Like, because 2.5 hours to train to the town, and then another like 15-minute drive. And then we finally got there. So the whole. I haven't really talked about this on the podcast, I don't think, but it was Autumn and I's 20th anniversary. When we got married, we eloped to Italy, and we had hired this company. I don't know if I should shout them out on the podcast. I'll shout them out on the podcast. If you guys want to get married in Italy, go to slowdreams.com. Like, they're the best. Just go to Slow Dream. We used to be on the website. Dreams website, they had a picture of our original wedding. But they had booked everything for us, basically. And like made the experience for two 24-year-old kids really magical. So we went back to them, and it was the same lady, and she remembered
us.
That's
so awesome.
And she like really, really helped us on this trip. She kind of surprised us with some stuff during the day that we were going to do. We weren't really planning on doing like a vow renewal, but we wanted to very much like take our pictures and have a fancy lunch and have like, there was a violin, there was like music. We had people playing music. Professional photographer Autumn got her hair and makeup did, like, we were gonna go up to it, going all out basically. And we did, and so like we were able to replicate, because we're at the same spot, we were able to replicate our original wedding photos.
Those are so good. You guys look so good.
It's really just amazing seeing like the difference in the 20 years, and it's just so like I've shown them to a few people now, and everybody is like, that is like the cutest, the most adorable thing
really
I've ever seen in my life. And
I showed my parents.
Good. And it was really romantic. I think the only thing was like, when you hire a professional photographer, like they genuinely want to take pictures of you everywhere they can. And the grounds and that place are so beautiful. But like, since we had been there 20 years ago, like they had added a pool. So the photographer was like, let's go to this pool. I mean, Autumn are like, we don't really care about taking pictures of this
pool. We're not like a pool group.
Yeah, we're not doing any of that. So like there was an aspect of it before. Like, we were just, like, at a certain point, we're just fucking done with pictures, right? Like, we just want to be... But
buzz off, man.
Still got a bunch of good pictures. He sent me, like, a zip file of them. And I was surprised that I was like able to download it on my phone and just like save it to files, and it just unzipped. Like, I was really surprised that we could do that. So I'm scrolling through them and like looking, you know, oh, there's, you know, multiple pictures. And then like in the middle of it, there's just a picture he took of a lizard for no reason. And I was just like, thanks, man. This is great.
Oh, all right. Cool.
And then the rest of the trip was absolutely fantastic. We went from, so we were in Maratea, which is like south of Italy. Then we trained up Salerno, which is like right next to the Amalfi Coast. Our people advised us, like, stay in Salerno. It's a lot quieter than going to the Amalfi Coast, which is like jam packed with tourists. And if you want to go to Amalfi, like, you can ferry over, and there's this beautiful ferry thing. The airline lost Autumn's luggage. So we had to, on the day we went to Salerno, we actually had to go all the way back to Naples, pick up her luggage, which was an experience. Like, that was a wild experience trying to get, like, they didn't just have like, here's your bag. Like, we had to go through a police checkpoint to get her luggage. It was insane.
Goodness gracious.
But it burned most of our day. So like the plan I had was to get to Salerno and like, you know, take the ferry and then have a day to explore Salerno and do all this stuff. But we kind of lost a day. But we walked across the street when we got there at like 7 p.m. And one of the places on my list to go just happened to be across the street. And we get there and it's like the seafood restaurant. There's nobody there. So I was a little worried because there's like, but apparently everyone just shows up at 9 p.m. Like, that's dinner time over there.
Gotcha.
And we're looking at the menu, and the very first thing on the menu is like the chef's thing. Like, chef's choice or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just like, this. Like, just bring us things.
Yeah, give us,
just
yeah.
Start bringing
if the
us
chef
things.
Chef thinks it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And they recommended a bottle of wine, which was delicious, and we maybe drank a little too much. And then they just started bringing us seafood. And shout out to, I think it was Nelson on the Discord, who said that, because I was posting pictures of all of the food we were eating, and I think she said, your food has too many eyes, which is just really funny, because it was like fresh ass seafood, like you could see everything.
Yeah.
But that was maybe the best meal of my life.
It
was so good that we went back to the same place the next day.
Sometimes that's what you got to do.
And then Rome was amazing. We went from there to Rome, which was very, very cool. We had done all the touristy stuff like years ago, so we weren't bothering with the Vatican or like the Colosseum. Like, we saw that shit 20 years ago. The Vatican,
it's not much different, I bet.
Yeah, and the Vatican was maybe like one of the worst experiences of my life.
Oh, sure.
Maybe, I mean, as a dude that just got diagnosed with cancer, maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole, but like, it was not a fun destination.
No,
let me say that.
With your chest.
Yeah. It was not a very cool place to be.
It's especially not as someone with a lot of religious fervor.
Yeah. But this time was just like food, drink, you know, hanging out, walking around.
That's what vacation should be all about.
Absolutely. And I'd Autumn put a little pressure on me because she's been so busy with work. And she was like, I don't have the capacity to like plan this trip. You need to do it. So like, I booked all of the flights. I, you know, found restaurants and stuff. So I've been like exceedingly nervous about this whole trip because what if it doesn't work out? Autumn is usually like so much smarter, so much more organized, and just has so much more thorough research than I ever can ever do, that I've been really, really nervous about it, but it worked out great. I picked out a restaurant in Rome. We booked a reservation. We get there. We were dressed fancy because I knew it was going to be a fancy place. We're sitting outside in like this courtyard that's probably 1,000 years old or some shit. We happen to be right next to like the taxi drop off place. And Chris, when I tell you, like, we were dressed fancy, the people that kept coming to this restaurant were so much more fancy than we are. I don't know if it was just full of like Italian soap opera stars or something. All of these people looked and acted famous. They all looked like they belonged to a special group of people that I could never, you know, endeavor to be a part of. Everybody was so handsome and beautiful, and me and Autumn are over there just like, vino. Like, we just had we were just so outclassed in every single way. And Autumn was beautiful, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that, but like, it was, I don't know what was happening. Like, and they barely spoke English, which was great. Most of Rome speaks English, by the way. Like, if you want to go to Rome, we would say things in Italian to people and they would just come back in English.
They were like, homie,
don't even that. I know English better than you know Italian. I'm like, you sure do.
Yeah. Okay, all right, thank you.
And then, yeah, the trip home was long, but good. They didn't lose our luggage.
Perfect.
So that was good. We got home at like 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. So My sister was house sitting for us, so like I stayed up a little bit with her and hung out, went to bed, woke up like no jet lag whatsoever, and then had all day Sunday to just chill out. So that's Italy in a nutshell.
That was Italy.
Yeah, it was super fun. I want to go back immediately. Like it's one of those situations where like Salerno was so beautiful and great. Like I feel like there's so much more we could have explored there, and I thought that was going to be like the brief stop. So in hindsight, I should have booked way more days there instead of Rome. But like I didn't know, I had no idea. I'd never been there.
Now you know for next time.
Now I know. So yeah, that's what I've been doing instead of podcasting.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been, chilling.
And you play Final Fantasy VIII.
Final Fantasy VIII.
Do you need to tell us anything about that?
I feel like after the Italy thing, it's not really. I got the ultimate weapon at the beginning of the game, uh-huh. which is something that I've always known you could do but have never done. And it was very satisfying. I love messing with that game and just like making it so everybody's stats are like astronomical. I got it so that like every type of magic will heal all my characters. So if they cast fire or thunder on me, it just heals me. I love being able to mess around with that stuff in that game. I've really learned this time, most of the strength that you can build up early on just comes from playing the card game a shitload, which is an amazing card game. It's a ton of fun. And you just turn the cards that you win into items, and then those items can be used for, you know, infinite number of things. So it's always a fun experience.
I feel like
it's
you've played this game a thousand times and you're still learning new stuff from
always
it.
Finding new stuff. Yeah. Because so many times when I play it, I'm just like doing it for the story because like I love the game so much and the characters and all that stuff. And then every once in a while I'm like, wait, I gotta like hang out with like the game system so you really have some fun with it. It's so easy to just breeze through, but this time I really focused on that kind of stuff and it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the X-Files. I've missed the X-Files. It's been a while.
Because we, you know, it's the last episode we did was the feedback episode, so we haven't watched X-Files in like a month.
There hasn't been playtime in a while.
There's not enough playtime because people keep going out of the cunch. Let's talk about X-Files.
Let's do it.